Hello and welcome to another episode of Sounds Like Comics, the podcast devoted to all things comic books in movies and TV. I'm Luke. My guest today is Nathan. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, and thanks for having me back.
Today's topic, The Wolverine, the sixth installment in the X-Men film series and the second installment in the trilogy of Wolverine films after X-Men Origins Wolverine. This is your warning. We will be talking spoilers. Now, the two of us, we went back to X-Men 2 and we've been working our way through.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to cover the Wolverine films ahead of Deadpool and Wolverine, which comes out in July. But what I realized when I was doing prep for this movie, we have missed one that we'll have to go back to. X-Men First Class came out in 2011. Yes. This came out 2 years later. So we will be eventually covering all the X-Men films, but I kind of thought over at that film stew, back when it first came out, Logan is done already. The two of us did X-Men Origins Wolverine, so it kind of made sense to do The Wolverine. I just wanted to make note of the fact that, yes, we have missed one, but we will go back to...
Yeah, we'll backtrack. No, I was when you first mooted the idea of doing the Wolverine solo films as well as the X films, I was overjoyed, you know, being a huge Wolverine fan. I was like, yes, I can't wait to talk about this because, you know, he's my favorite comic book character.
It's not a coincidence that I keep asking you back as a guest whenever I'm going to be talking anything X-related Wolverine.
I figured. But no, I mean, it's so great that we get to do this because, you know, it's a joy to revisit these movies again as a fan and rewatch them all these years later and come back and talk about them.
And that's it. And you always find yourself watching them through different eyes. Like when you're knowing that you're going to, okay, so I'm going to watch it this time, but I'm going to talk about it. So you're watching out for different things, maybe noticing things you didn't pick up on that first couple of times.
Exactly. And isn't it great to be able to frame it through that lens too, especially when you have to talk about it?
Yeah, absolutely. The film's development began in 2009 after the release of X-Men Origins Wolverine. Christopher McQuarrie was hired to write a screenplay for the Wolverine in August 2009. In October 2010, Darren Aronofsky was hired to direct the film. So a few changes were happening behind the scenes before we got the film that we're here to talk about. The project was delayed following Aronofsky's departure in June 2011. James Mangold was brought on to replace Aronofsky. Mark Bomback, who was the screenwriter of the recent Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and War of the Planet of the Apes films, he was hired to rewrite the screenplay in September 2011. So yes, it went through multiple directors, screenwriters, and it was one of the films that was converted to 3D in post-production. You know, we got Avatar in 2009. Oh, man, yeah. Those converted in post-production 3D films, hated them. Oh.
Yeah, I thought the 3D fad was so ridiculous. I'm so glad that it was short-lived.
But when done right, like Avatar, Way of Water, it reminds you how good it can be. But that's
true.
There's an intent there. That's what James Cameron wanted to make, a 3D experience. But when it's 3D in post-production, like I remember watching Clash of the Titans in 3D. Mm. Some of the CGI effects, you could see corners. It's like, you could see like a fold. It did not look good on the big screen at all. So I did not watch this in 3D. I saw it at the cinema. Purposely chose 2D.
Absolutely, me too.
The film was released by 20th Century Fox in various international markets on July 24th, 2013, and in the United States 2 days later. It received generally positive reviews from critics with praise for its action sequences, production design, and Jackman's performance, though criticism was directed towards the climax. The film earned $414 million worldwide, making it the fifth highest grossing film in the series. And there is an unrated extended cut of the film referred to as the Unleashed Extended Edition that was released on Blu-ray, featuring more blood and violence, extended action scenes, as well as additional footage during moments of character interaction. And then, yes, a third film titled Logan was released on March 3rd, 2017.
Well, the extended version on Blu-ray would be worth getting. I had no idea that such a copy existed. So a version existed, so that would be cool.
I knew about it, but yet I haven't seen it. But they were doing that, weren't they? Was it Days of Future Past? And there was like a rogue cut of that movie. You know, they were putting out a few special editions, weren't they, for the Fox X-Men films?
It makes sense. I mean, James Mangold and Hugh Jackman have long wanted to make Wolverine a hard R, and that's what they eventually did with Logan. Like an R-rated, hard R-rated, violent as hell movie, and they got it with Logan. So you can see that the road to that was paved with the Wolverine, and so it makes complete sense that they would do an alternate version which was a little more gory, a little more violent, which was like almost like a prelude to Logan in terms of the tone.
But this one, it's such a different film, isn't it? I mean, X-Men Origins Wolverine, I mean, it's like it was having a bit of an identity crisis, wasn't it? It wanted to be an X-Men film, wanted to be a Wolverine film, whereas this one is the Wolverine film. Like, it really is. They were able to still set it within the X universe. You had mutants.
But it felt standalone, too.
It did, but it didn't feel like they were shoehorning things in, which is what we got with Origins. Mm. Like, you could have Famke Janssen back as Jean Grey.
And there was enough to service. There was enough to service that fan base, and like you say, feel inclusive to the X canon, the Fox X canon, and they did a great job with that. But I think it also, on its own merits, stands on its own two feet, and it feels, because he's in Japan, and it feels like a Wolverine solo adventure. It doesn't feel so firmly entrenched in the wider X-Men U.
Absolutely. But it is a better way of doing it. Like, having Jean Grey in this movie, it moves the plot forward. It doesn't distract. It tells you where it takes place in the continuity. It reminds you of the movie X-Men The Last Stand, which some people would like to forget. It's not the best X movie, but it reminds you that movie happened. This takes place after that. Because when I was looking into this, at one point, this was being set up as a prequel. They wanted it to be before the very first X-Men film. But then it was decided that it would be better to have the X-Men be disbanded after The Last Stand, and have Wolverine be more of a loner, which is what we get in this film. So I think it was the right choice. But it's a proper Wolverine solo movie.
And the loner mentality is his default nature anyway. So it works out perfectly. We see him at the start of this movie, very detached up in Canada, very reclusive, very alone, and clearly carrying a ton of baggage and trauma. And I think that's just perfect for Logan, you know, wanting to retreat, wanting to get away. And that's where we find him at the start of this movie. And I love that.
And at the start of the movie, you've got that great scene with the hunters that are using poison. And they leave the bear slowly dying. He puts it out of his misery. And he goes and he confronts them. Yeah, there's some great Wolverine moments.
There's that line where he puts the bear out of its misery and he says, "Don't make me do this." And the way he said, Jackman delivers that line with such mournful dour, like that mournful tone, like he feels the bear's pain, and it's there's that moment. I love that. Jackman's able to do that. He gives Wolverine humanity. He gives him gravitas despite being this killing machine. You know, he gives him those things in him, and I love that.
Well, having this be his film, like, he really does get to shine. Like, Jackman gets to show off what he's really capable of. Like, the performance he's giving in this, where there's no Xavier, there's no Cyclops to lean on. Like, he can be the guy. So we're getting all these different ranges of emotions. Jackman really is fantastic in this. You know, I mentioned box office, $414.8 million. The budget of this movie, between 100 and 132 million. So not bad for his first proper solo movie. Yeah,
absolutely. No.
And again, what did I say? It ended up being, was it the fifth highest grossing in the series? So yeah, well done, Hugh.
It deserved to be, I think, to my mind at least, it deserved to be higher than fifth in terms of, you know, its place.
Well, we're talking box office. I can see, I like the movie more for what it is. They were able to strip it back and not have it as colourful as the previous X-Men movies. But maybe, you know, maybe that's what people wanted. But I mean, hey, like, it clearly did really well at the box office. And then we later got Logan and many other X-Men films. But I don't think this one would maybe appeal as much to younger audiences than those previous X-Men films.
I think this sat really well with longtime Wolverine fans and X-Men fans because, well, of course, we're getting a storyline that's very well known. It's very old school and it's adapted loosely from what Chris Claremont did with Wolverine, taking him to Japan. And, you know, all the classic elements. Yuriko's there, Mariko's there. It really is a nice nod to the old school canon in the comics.
Yeah, absolutely. I do have those comics as well. That the original run from 1982. Got to meet Chris Claremont when he came to Perth. It was around about the time, it was before this movie came out, and got to meet him. He signed my Wolverine books. I had a bit of a chat to him about this. And
that's so cool.
Days of Future Past. It was like the perfect time for him to be here and to meet him.
What a great thing. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. James Mangold, this ended up being, he's done two, hasn't he? This and Logan, they're the two X films that he did. Great director.
It seems to be, but there's a synergy between him and Jackman, doesn't there? Like, they just get each other. They just work really well together, and they've got that rapport between director and actor. They have a very clear and concise vision of what they want to do with Logan, and it shows on the screen. It really does for the two movies that were helmed by Mangold. I think it really is it's really visceral. It shows.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm trying to think, I'm trying to think, what did he do recently? He directed the latest Indiana Jones film.
That's right. Will of Destiny.
Yeah, that's what Mangold did recently. But I'm thinking other films that I've seen of his that I've enjoyed, Walk the Line, the Johnny Cash biopic with Joaquin Phoenix. And he directed the remake of 3:10 to Yuma with Christian Bale and Russell Crowe. So yeah, really good director.
Absolutely. I'm familiar with those films too.
Yeah, no, yeah, all good films. Hugh Jackman, we've said, you know, this really is his movie. But if you think back to any of the marketing, any of the promo material for this, he's topless. Like, he's got his shirt off in pretty much all the promo material. But he really himself through the ring.
Well, that's how they sold it. You know, he got in incredible shape.
He did, but do you know how he did it though? Like, because he really had to, you know, put a lot of work in. So he wanted to get as ripped and cut as possible. So he adopted a dehydration diet used in bodybuilding where he did not consume any liquid for 36 hours before filming his shirtless shots. He said it made him feel headachy and faint, but he was pleased with the results, and dehydrating tightened everything up and gave him the exaggerated muscle definition that he wanted for his role in this movie for the shirtless scenes. But this is a thing, like, you know, whether it's men, women in film, music, fashion, you're looking at a snapshot. It's not sustainable. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, anyway, it's dangerous, it's not real life. And yes, it's dangerous for the short periods of time, like having no liquid for that amount of time.
And it can, like the dehydration and everything. Can you imagine? It would be horrible.
Torture. It's good that he's happy with the results. And, you know, as audience members, you know, we're seeing Wolverine on screen. Like, look how ripped he is. He looks like a comic character. Yeah. But wow.
Yeah.
He really put himself.
Oh, yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure if he pushed it that far in later films. In fact, you know what? Maybe Days of Future Past. I think he was pretty ripped in that, wasn't he?
Because they shot those two back to back. I'm pretty sure the Wolverine Days of Future Past were shot back to back or within a very short period of time of each other. So that tracks and it makes complete sense.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, I do remember it was very, very in shape for that one as well.
I remember seeing some behind the scenes stuff that he was posting and talking about during this time period. And he was doing like ridiculous amounts of food. His energy consumption, his mass consumption to get that big was crazy. And he was doing like whole chickens and like two or three whole chickens and like whole loaves of bread and everything. It was absolutely insane.
It's always a chicken, isn't it?
Yep. Because that's the big protein thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. It's always with a chicken.
I said it made him sick. Like he ate to the point where he was just like literally nauseous. But
even if it's your favorite food. Yeah. Burgers. I know you like burgers. Burgers or whatever. You're going to get to the point where it's all like, I might not want burger for a while.
Yeah.
You can get over things very quickly. So, yeah, time into consume. Oh, yeah. And those
poor chickens. He really suffered for his art. He suffered for his art, and it shows on the screen.
Absolutely. And he's coming back one more time again in the new Deadpool movie. Very excited.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait. I was overjoyed when I got that when we saw that announcement.
That's it. It's a July. We don't have to wait. We don't have to wait.
Can't come soon enough.
You know what we do get in this movie, which I've never liked, and it's the second time we've seen it in X-Men movies. Bone claws. We get bone claws in this movie. I mean, there's a story reason that adamantium is literally ripped off his bones. I get it. It's his original mutation. You know, we saw bone claws when he was a boy and before he was experimented on Origins.
They're kind of maniacal.
But it's like when I think Wolverine, you know, he's got the animalistic abilities. But it's the metal claws. Yeah, it's the adamantium claws. It's like when I think of Rogue, she can fly, she's got super strength, and yes, she can, you know, absorb people's abilities. But that was because in the comics and in the X-Men cartoons, she stole the abilities of Carol Danvers, Miss Marvel. But
the movie's doing dirty. Yeah.
Well, I don't care about any of that. I just know that to be the character. But you're saying the movie did a dirty, it just adapted the original version of the character. Even if you look at the X-Men Evolution cartoon, it's that original version of her abilities. But Rogue was a disappointment in the live action movies. Nothing against Anna Paquin, not her fault. It's just the version of the character
was critically criminally underused.
So Rogue should fly, super strength, Wolverine. Yeah. Metal claws, and he loses them in this, and then his claws are getting put off, and it doesn't go anywhere. He doesn't go anywhere, though.
It
sets something up, and it goes nowhere.
My hang-up about it has always been, and this is what I used to rack my brain about, in between the events of the Wolverine and then Days of Future Past, because he reluctantly aligns himself with Magneto as an ally, how does he get the metal back in the future? You know, like it's rebonded to his claws. It's because when I think about it, because his claws are cut off by the Silver Samurai, and I used to wonder why that happened. Then I realized adamantium cancels out adamantium. So the Silver Samurai sword is like scalding hot adamantium. So that makes sense that it would be able to sever his claws. But the rest of his skeleton is still bone. Sorry, the rest of his skeleton is still adamantium. So it's just these claws that are coming out as bone. So then how is it he comes to reacquire the adamantium rebonded to his claws in the future? And it's got to, the answer has to be, obviously Magneto at some point must have rebonded. He's used his abilities to rebond the adamantium to his claws. That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, and it very well could be what happens, but whatever does happen, it happens off screen.
We don't get that closure.
Yeah, that's it. And this is the thing where it doesn't go anywhere. Like, if it's part of the story, and it does work in this movie, because again, like, the adamantium is stripped away and used by the Silver Samurai, it works, it makes sense. But for him to be left at the end of the movie with bone claws, and then the next movie, and don't get me wrong, I've said, I'm not a fan of bone claws. I didn't want to see him again. But to not see them again and not have an explanation, it's like, well, why end that movie? You might as well have just had him defeat Silver Samurai and just have him get doused in liquid adamantium or whatever, and he's just got him back. It was just a weird way to end with bone claws.
I agree with you.
Explain it.
I agree with you. It's never sat well with me, that ending. But the only thing that redeems it for me is the revelation that adamantium cancels out adamantium. That's the only way I can really, you know, be good with the ending of that film.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, I guess. Days of Future Past, great film.
Hollywood.
We at least got another good film after. Well, we a couple of good films after
we,
this
we
one.
Can't harsh on, we can't harsh on it too badly. I mean, other than the way this film ends, it's otherwise a really, really good adaptation.
So there's lots of other characters introduced here. Majority of the film does take place in Japan. We've got Mariko, the granddaughter. There's the connection to connection to Silver Samurai. All that's going on. We've got a rogue type character in Yukio, and I think there was a draft of the movie originally where it was going to be Rogue and Logan in Japan together, but then they really wanted him to have that feeling of isolation and have him be without any of the X-Men in Japan. It just added to that isolation. So we get Yukio, who is a mutant here, wasn't a mutant in the comics, but here she's got precog abilities.
Yes,
and she fears for Wolverine. She's worried that he's going to die. And I really do like the idea of them stripping Wolverine of his abilities or of his healing factor. That was a really cool
and
idea.
Making him vulnerable.
Well, that's it, because it's very evident that he overly relies on that. Is he a capable fighter? Absolutely. But does he need to fight as well as he would do without abilities? No, because he can take unnecessary risks, because no harm is going to come to him. So it's interesting.
Knit himself back together,
But interesting seeing him having to fight, but defend himself as well. Like, he's not really had to do that in previous films. So that was all very interesting.
I agree. I mean, it was jarring to me the first time watching this movie to see that. And I was like, oh man, this isn't Wolverine. He's not a pussy. He's not a wuss. But then I realized upon later viewings, it's actually good that they stripped him of his healing factor for a good percentage of the movie, because it does make him more vulnerable and the stakes are considerably higher. And that shows he has to be careful now, and he's not used to this. He's not used to being a bit more kind of, his mortality is a bit more there, you know, makes him change things up and think a bit more about how he's got to do things. And wasn't Yukio a revelation? Wasn't she great? She was awesome. She's like the breakout star of that movie.
Yeah, no, she really is. But do you know what it just made me think of, right? So this is the second Wolverine movie. He loses his powers. What happens in the second Superman movie with Christopher Reeve? He loses his powers. What happens in the second Spider-Man movie with Tobey Maguire? He loses his powers. Oh.
You're seeing a theme there.
Absolutely.
It's just like a plot device.
It works, though. You know, but
True. Because, I mean, again, you have to make your character, your protagonist, you have to make them vulnerable. It serves the story. It shows you their weaknesses as well as their strengths.
Well, that's it. You can't just have them be all powerful all the time. So it's something away?
You imagine if Logan hadn't have had that weakness exposed, then he could have easily just gone and taken out everyone, and it wouldn't have been a big deal. Like, the movie would be over in like half an hour. It'd be a Dirty Harry style movie, which it kind of is, but, you know, for different reasons. Now you've had this new element, this new dynamic, and that gives you an interesting avenue to explore narratively.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm just thinking, you know, the opening of this movie, when you've got the atomic bombing of Nagasaki, and you've got Yashada, when he's a young man, Wolverine protects him, and then Yashada, he makes it his life to find Wolverine. He's dying as an old man, and he wants Wolverine's healing abilities for himself. But where the film starts, it's what you get with the X-Men films, and, you know, Days of Future Past as well, when they're in the 70s, is real world events. And although you've got all these other high concepts, it grounds it. So it's interesting that it starts that way. It's like, oh wow, yeah, this is like seeing history, but with these like new added superhuman elements. So to start there, when you do get to that third act, it really does become a different film, doesn't it? I mean, Silver Samurai, I am familiar with him from the comics, more so from the 90s X-Men cartoon.
Yeah.
What we get in this movie, though, where he's just this giant, like, super shredder
gigantic
character.
Robot, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't know, man.
And it's not even... It's not even Harada, who's the Silver Samurai in the movie. Harada is in it, but he's not the samurai. Whereas in the comics, it's Harada.
Yeah. Yeah. It ends up being silly. A little bit silly. But before we get to the big confrontation, when you've got the big giant silver suit, when Wolverine, he fixes himself, the device that was in him that was stopping his healing factor, he cuts it out himself, which was brutal. It was a great scene.
But it's like a parasite.
That's it. But then when he's going up there to confront him, the enemy is surrounding him and he's getting shot multiple times with bow and arrows. Which is fantastic. And he keeps pushing forward and they're pulling it back and he keeps pushing forward. I mean, there's some really great Wolverine moments in this movie, and that's definitely one of them. But for me, it's like that's where the movie stops being great, when he's got all the arrows in his back. As soon as he's got that big confrontation, it's not as good and ends up being a much different film to what we'd been up until
that point.
So it is a bit of a letdown. I mean, it doesn't ruin the film, but it just felt like he was heading in a different direction.
I do agree with you. I had to agree with you strongly there, because I really did enjoy all the build up and all the exposition to get to that final confrontation. When we get to the final confrontation, it is a little bit underwhelming, as you say, or a little bit incongruent with what we've just watched. So you're right. But my two favorite moments are a bit more subtle. Firstly, getting back to the World War II scene, the Hiroshima scene, I love when he's at the bottom of the silo as a prisoner. And he says in that low whispery voice to him, "Those are B-52s, bub." And it sounds exactly almost like Cal Dodd, the voice actor who does the voice of Logan in the cartoons. Same kind of whispery, hushed cadence in his voice. And it's like the parallel is there. And I loved it. I was like, oh, man, this, like, Jackman's really, really nailing Wolverine here. He's really getting into the character. I love that. And the second moment is the one where he's on the balcony. It's pouring down rain in Tokyo. He's really missing Jean. He's miserable. He's contemplating the fact that he can't die, and he just wants to, so he can be reunited with her. And he takes that big suicidal tumble over the balcony. But then when there's two versions of it. There's one version that's not edited and one that is. The unedited version, you see him land on the ground. He's not dead, and he shakes his hands in frustration. Why can't I die? You know, he's just so, you know, like, overwhelmed. Like, he's just distraught. He's like, why? I just want to end my suffering. Why can't I? But you don't see it in the edited version. They don't cut to that shot. Yeah, that's interesting. They're my two favorite moments. They speak to his character a lot.
So that other version, then, where have you seen that? The unedited version?
I think it was Disney Plus, because I've got the DVD. And in the DVD, you do see that scene where he's on the ground and he's not dead. But the Disney Plus version, for whatever reason, you see him tumble over the ledge. From Mariko's point of view, you do see him go over, and that's it. It doesn't cut to the shot where he's on the ground afterwards.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Yeah,
I noticed that upon watching it on Disney Plus for this review.
And that's what I watched. That's the version I would have seen. Yeah, my rewatch was also on Disney Plus. Oh, that's interesting. You know, we've mentioned the mid-credit sequence already. Xavier, Magneto. Did you know, though, that Simon Kinberg wrote that mid-credit sequence, and it was shot on the set of X-Men Days of Future Past? So that's what you were saying.
That's very cool.
That's what you were saying, how they were shot back-to-back, and this came out in 2013.
Well,
Days of Future Past was the following year.
And that served as a very interesting bookend.
That's a good run for X-Men films to have First Class in 2011, and then 2 years later for this, and then another year, and you get Days of Future Past.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's a really good synergy as well.
You know, have you seen the alternate ending that was filmed for this, where Yukio presents Logan with a box that contains his yellow Wolverine mask from the comic books. The scene was presented as a bonus feature on the Blu-ray. Have you seen that?
Yes, the classic suit. It's like the brown and tan, or the yellow and brown.
But what's interesting, though, at the time, and they didn't end up using it anyway, but at the time, that was clearly the closest we were going to get to the classic Wolverine costume.
Costumed Logan, yep.
But we've already seen that shot. We've not seen much, to be fair, but we've seen that shot of what he looks like in the new Deadpool film. And it is bright yellow, bright blue, really leaning into the comic primary colors. Yep. So this would have been cool at the time, but never in a million years would we have thought.
I love that we even see the gloves. I love that we even see the gloves with the housings on the backs of the knuckles so that the claws will come out of. That's so cool.
That's cool.
That's awesome. That's cool. I mean, we haven't seen the mask yet, to be fair, but that's fine. I don't need to see the mask. I know it's coming. You know,
and
you can't do Wolverine without the mask.
You need that's to have the really mask. Cool. Yeah.
That's going to be a fan service moment if ever there was one.
Absolutely. But so far, based on what we've seen, very, very excited for Deadpool and Wolverine.
Cannot wait.
You know, I've done it before where I've told you the body count. You know, so we could talk about the tone. This is much darker, bloodier, grittier than previous X-Men films.
Yep.
So, I'm trusting the internet. I didn't sit there and count all the deaths in this movie. But if the internet is to be believed, there is 127 deaths in this film.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
High body count. I mean,
when you think about it, Logan is a killing machine. So it makes sense. The body count's going to be high.
It does, but they didn't show him as a killing machine very much. I mean, they alluded to it, you're told, in those X-Men films, but you really do get to see it here. It's fully cutting loose. And then, of course, there's all the other characters that are doing the killings as well. But yeah, that's a pretty, pretty high body count, so I thought worth mentioning.
Yeah. I think that's what I liked about Logan, too, just that the third movie is that it doesn't pull any punches. You do see a lot more graphic violence.
A lot more than this.
Like
Logan.
This is cool, though. This was a great stepping stone on the way to that. And you couldn't have Logan without this movie. This movie is the bridge to it.
Perfect. Stepping stone, bridge. Yep, absolutely. Yep. You couldn't go from X-Men Origins Wolverine to Logan. You needed this film.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
The linchpin. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. This was the pivotal linchpin. Because this was like MA-15, I'm pretty sure, which is mature, and then Logan was a hard R.
Yeah, so there you go. We've already said how this one is or looks grittier than the other X-Men movies that had come before it. David Leitch, who was working on stunts for this film, and he's got the Fall Guy movie coming out with Ryan Gosling that I'm looking forward to. So now he's a director in his own right. But back when this movie came out, he was working doing stunts. And he was saying that what they set out to do from the get-go was tackle more stunts using practical means and not rely as much on post-production CGI. It definitely does show, and it comes out in the performances, not just like the bigger, you know, effects,
set pieces. Yeah,
seeing actors react to something that really is moving, it definitely adds a lot more to the experience. But this movie did feel very stripped back compared to those other X-Men movies, and him saying that, it does make sense. What we experienced is what they set out to do.
It plays more like an old 70s style flick, like Dirty Harry or something, as I alluded to before. It's got that element to it.
It does. And we can tell when an actor is reacting to something that's really there. Whether it's,
the audience isn't stupid.
A car, an explosion, you know, whatever it may be. And that, again, the Fall Guy looks fantastic. Looking forward to that movie. And Bullet Train, which is a recent movie that he did. So whenever a stunt guy is making movies and making action movies, I'm there for it. The John Wick films.
Yeah, really, you know, there's going to be a degree of realism to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. Well, again, that's the awesome. Fall Guy, it's the last time I mention it. They've just won a Guinness World Record, and it is the amount of times that a car has flipped. And I should remember the number, but I can't. Maybe it's like 7 or 7.5, something like that. But they got it all on camera, and they got it in the Guinness Book World of Records for it, for like putting a stunt like that on film. Very, wow. Very impressive. But from that's stunts cool. to the score, Marco Beltrami, I think the first time I ever noticed or heard of this guy, it was Scream 3. I think that's where it first happened. And, you know, he did Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines. And man, this guy has done a lot. He has done a lot of horror films like Mimic, The Faculty, Resident Evil, The Woman in Black, Carrie, A Quiet Place, The Nun 2, action films, Live Free or Die Hard, World War Z, sci-fi, I, Robot, Snowpiercer, Westerns, 3:10 to Yuma, Jonah Hex. Yeah, oh man, a massive resume. Superhero films, mate. This guy can do it all. We're talking Hellboy. He did this and he came back for Logan. He did Venom, Let There Be Carnage. This guy, wow.
Prolific is the word.
I'm not seeing any romantic comedies on his resume, but you know what? Not going to hold it against him. That is a very impressive resume. So, yeah, Marco Beltrami.
It's amazing.
Absolutely. Well, all right then. I know you love the character of Wolverine, but I don't know how much you love this film. I've got a feeling you do, but if you're going to rate the Wolverine out of 5.
Look, the longtime fan of me wants to give it 5 without a doubt, unquestionably, and I'm very, very tempted to do so, but I'm going to show some restraint, come down to a 4.5, which is unusual for me, but I think all our talk of the final confrontation scene is probably what sells it. I mean, it's got a lot going for it. There's a lot to like about it. It's a great film. I loved it for the most part, and I still do. Still holds a place in my heart, and I still enjoy it, rewatching it each and every time I revisit it. It's just that fight scene at the end. It just feels clunky and disjointed, in contrast to the rest of the film. And there's too many questions that arise in my head because of it. So that's what prevents me from giving this a 5. Other than that, I enjoyed the hell out of it, and it's straight up Wolverine. It's what we needed and what we wanted, and we couldn't have Logan without this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a 4 out of 5 for me, and it's the same as you. It's that final confrontation. It really does make the movie wobble at the end. Like, imagine only watching the first 20 minutes and the final 20 minutes, you'd be like, what the hell happened in the middle? It's a completely different film. It really does become something else, and it's a bit of an anticlimax, and we get bone claws. But this is, for me, like, when we got Hugh Jackman back as Wolverine in this movie, it was incredible. Like, it really was fantastic, because he was kind of just there. Like, he's always been good as Wolverine since that first X-Men film. But we got more of the same in X-Men Origins Wolverine. But this was the first time when they really did something different. And then, of course, with Logan, they really did something different again. But this movie was the first standout where it's like, look at this guy. Look at Hugh Jackman. He's carrying this whole movie.
Mm. And I think it was a character study, and it was a chance for him to really do a deep dive into the character and into his psyche. Who is James Howlett? Who is he? You know, and he really did a great job bringing that to the screen.
It's going to be a hard act to follow, because we know that Wolverine, or should I say Logan, was going to be the last Wolverine film, and we're getting that Deadpool film. That's going to be the last one. Eventually, they're going to have to cast a new Wolverine.
And that's going to be a very strange and difficult transition.
Tough, because I've just been rewatching the Daniel Craig Bond films, and we're going to get a new Bond. They're going to do it. They're going to start again.
Same thing, Daniel Craig.
You're like, and of course there's been many actors before Daniel Craig, so it is different to Wolverine, but at the same time, watching Daniel Craig as Bond, it's like they've nailed it.
I think anytime you have to recast a character, it's going to be difficult, but I think you know, you have to embrace it and say someone else needs to have a turn and step up and do the job, because Jackman can't play the role forever, even though as much as we want him to. And Jackman's done a hell of a lot with the character, and we love him for his service to the character, his dedication to the character. But at some point, you know, things have to change, and you just have to be allowing of it, no matter how much you dislike it or don't want it.
And I get it. I get all that. It's just what a tough act to follow. I mean, it's almost... it is almost a 25th anniversary of him playing this same character. Incredible.
Yeah, and that's so definitive, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. It's huge. And nobody else up until now, or, you know, whatever happens next, but nobody else has played Wolverine.
Isn't that incredible? We have so many different actors playing Batman. We have so many different actors playing and actresses playing different iterations of characters, but only one actor has played Wolverine the entire time.
Incredible.
And it's going to be really, really, really hard to see him leave the role eventually. But for now, at least we get to see him again.
Absolutely. Well, that's it for our episode all about the Wolverine. If you want to contact us about this episode or request a topic for an upcoming show, you can find us on Facebook as Sounds Like Comics Podcast. Nathan, thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me back, Bob. Always a pleasure, never a chore.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.